Of the Hornets, go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has to win. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, Tua's going to play Saturday. He's going to play. Stop asking.
Man, you know, I understand why they ask him the question, because obviously, you know, he's been limping around. You know, he's hesitant to get off the ground after, you know, hits in the past few weeks. And I can understand the question, man, because there are some coaches out there that you wouldn't even dress the guy because you've got Citadel. And so while I know that he's going to play because he's a competitor and he probably wants to play even if Saban wouldn't play him, I'll be honest with you, man. I wish any of these guys that were banged up wouldn't see the field, because I don't think it's necessary. There's bigger things yet on the horizon. And these guys have to get well if they're going to get to, you know, if they're going to finish the season the way they want to.
Yeah, I think it's a classic situation where more than one thing can be true. And so it can absolutely be true that Alabama's a better team than Citadel, and we got some players banged up, and we've got a two-game stretch with Auburn and then Georgia, and we would like to go into that fully healthy and fully rested and ready to play. That can 100% be true. It can also be true in sort of the Saban mantra that we play to a standard. We adhere to a process. We don't take days off. We don't take weeks off. We don't allow ourselves to relax. We don't assume that we've won the game. And we don't slack up in our preparation, regardless of the opponent, because we are preparing against a standard, and that standard does not allow that wiggle room. And so I think there's a little bit of both things are true. And the last thing Saban is going to do is go out and sort of, you know, talk about, yeah, we're glad it's a cupcake. We're glad that we can rest some guys. We're glad, because that is so contrary to the message he's talking about in the room with the players. Now, come game day, if he can get the guys out at the end of the first quarter or before half, he will. But they're going to go into the game. They're going to start the game and perform in the game against a standard. And I think that's sort of the conflict that he might feel on a week like this.
I'm with you, but I will argue that Tua should not see the field and Tua should not take a snap, because I think that your third string quarterback can get the job done with your defense against Citadel. And so some of these guys who are a little bit banged up playing a little bit, I get it. Do I think Tua should play? No, I don't think he should play at all. Now, just like Saban doesn't allow his coaching staff to do interviews, you know, everything is kept up, you know, hush, 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 right? Like no one knew that Jalen Hurts was having ankle surgery. Well, he does a good job with his former players too. Okay. Because you never hear them talk about this, but you heard Jonathan Allen last year in some interview hint at how he played hurt every game.
Yep.
And I know that they have, you know, they have some of the best means to get these guys well week in, week out. Okay. They have some of the best facilities, the best resources in the nation, probably matching, you know, a lot of NFL teams. And so that allows them, you know, I mean, take Quinnen Williams as an example, right? And we'll get to him in a minute. But I just want to give the example of in the LSU game, you and I saw where he would make a sack in the backfield and he would barely be able to get off the field so gingerly, and like he couldn't even put weight on one of his legs on the sideline. And then he'd be back out there a couple more plays. I mean, in that LSU game, I'm sitting there saying, why is Quinnen Williams still in the game? It's 22-0. And so I will say that to your point about the process, these players, okay, they do play through injuries and they do it all the time. And a lot of it is just not talked about. It's kind of like the NFL has the, you know, probable and not probable, you know, all injury reports they have to put out on Monday. Dude, if they did that in college, I bet you we'd have 20, 25 guys on the Alabama sheet every Monday.
Yeah,
for something.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think, and we've talked about this before, I do think there is sort of that NFL mentality that, you know, your best ability is your availability, that kind of approach. And we don't hear anything about Quinnen, or we don't hear anything about some of the other players that have dings up because they're not the starting quarterback who is all the rave, you know, in college football. And there's, you know, I am certain that there's a part of coach that wishes, I wish it were someone else, not, you know, only just because I wouldn't be asked about it so many times, but, you know, kind of here we are. Let's talk about offense, Mississippi State. What stood out to you?
Mississippi State came into the Mississippi State had a highly ranked defense coming into this game. I believe the stat, correct me if I get this wrong here, but I believe they had only given up one rushing touchdown in the prior eight games. I believe that is correct.
Yep,
and so you're feeling pretty good after the first quarter in which they have gotten two, you know, rushing touchdowns. And at one point, Alabama had the ball for 31 plays and Mississippi State had the ball for six plays and, you know, two, three and outs. And so at that point, here we are establishing the run. Gary Danielson is sitting here saying, you know, Tua wants to let one loose, and we're sitting here controlling the line of scrimmage. But I have to tell you that for whatever reason, okay, adjustments made by Mississippi State, us just maybe letting off the gas as far as the offensive line goes, mm-hmm. You know, you have to search for a reason how the switch got flipped so badly. Because Deonte Brown came out of the game, okay, and Lester Cotton came in, and, you know, Lester Cotton did some good things, but I will tell you, from the time they announced that Deonte Brown had come out of the game, the offensive line fell apart.
Yeah.
And they went from controlling the line of scrimmage and running the ball down their throats to they couldn't run the ball. I mean, I don't remember many football games where you rush for two rushing touchdowns in the first quarter and you are controlling the game, and then it just all falls apart. And I'm saying before Tua went out, it fell apart.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's true. I think that I put that more on adjustments by Mississippi State than I do all on the shoulders of Lester Cotton. That doesn't mean Deonte Brown's not playing better than Lester Cotton. I mean, he beat him out. I think that's sort of self-evident. But I don't put – and so, you know, here again, multiple things are true. I think the running game took a hit as a result of that. But I don't think all of the woes for all of the rest of the offensive woes are a result of that. I think
no. By the way, I'm not assuming that he's only one of five linemen. I'm not saying fell on him. I'm just saying the timing of it is that it seems like the ground game fell apart at that point.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, there's a relationship, but it's not causal, right? And you know, I think the two opening drives, you know, we possessed the ball for 10 minutes on the two opening drives, you know, scored 14 points, demonstrated some power running. More than half of our offensive yards for the day came on those two offensive drives, 156 on those two drives versus 149 the rest of the day, which is that itself is just a truly amazing stat. But I think, and, you know, Alabama fans this season, we've gotten so accustomed to the high wire act of the passing game. I think these opening two drives against Mississippi State are as impressive as anything we have done offensively this season. Mississippi State was heralded as a dark horse to win the West, as a dark horse to win the conference, because everyone knew that their defense is going to be stacked. They're bringing in this Joe Moorhead, who is going to be offensive minded. He's going to look at what he's done at Penn State. He's going to open up the offense, and there's a little optimism there and putting all that together. But one thing that has been true is the strength of their defense. And they were averaging, you know, they were one of the leaders in the nation and scoring defense, averaging, you know, allowing opponents 12 points a game. that is just darn impressive. And the adjustments they made, I certainly give them credit to the adjustments. But for those two drives, for Alabama to just dominate running the ball, I thought that was quite impressive, quite a statement. I just don't know where that went. That just seemed to sort of, you know, evaporate, you know, at you know, when State made their adjustments. But I thought those were in two impressive drives, and then it sort of fizzled out from there.
No, it absolutely did. What do you think of? And I didn't see a whole lot of, like, they weren't necessarily, they didn't change their front. Okay, they didn't put an extra guy in the box or anything like that. They did start doing some delayed blitzes, but besides that, I didn't see a lot of big adjustments to be able to put together, you know, what changed there. Because like you said, the second drive was 13 plays for 83 yards. I mean, we literally had just controlled the line of scrimmage. Talk about just briefly, talk about if you could, the hit on Tua. Obviously, you know, there's all this discussion about, you know, protecting the players and, you know, the crown of your helmet and, you know, helmet to helmet contact, etc. It did not appear to me as if the safety was trying to make a tackle. He did not have his arms up. It looked to me like he literally just launched himself at his left leg. And while I can't, you know, I have no proof that it appeared like he was going for the knee, you know, he ends up getting his thigh right above his knee. But dude, it just seems to me like they were going for that leg. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm not saying the kid's a dirty player. I'm just saying that he launched himself with his arms at his side, leading with the crown of his helmet at the guy's lower right extremity. And I think there had to be something there.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough thing because it's quite an accusation to make. I think that I think when you're on the defensive front and you're doing all that you can to get past the offense, there's going to be times where you lunge or you leap or you jump. You know, one of the Superman plays that Jonathan Allen, you know, you mentioned him earlier, was, you know, a sort of a Superman dive that he made out to sack, you know, sack the quarterback. And, you know, I'd like to think that he wasn't going for anybody's knees, but that's just that exerted effort that you're putting out there. And so I want to think that that's what it is. I want to think that sort of there's a brotherhood, you know, even across opposing teams that, hey, you know, we're in the SEC, we're in this together, we're playing college football, we're not trying to hurt anybody, we're just trying to play a physical game. And sometimes things happen. That's what I want. That's what I want, you know, it to be. I do think, you know, and Saban went on a, you know, I don't want to say a rant, but, you know, he called out, you know, the NFL has rules about going low against a player. And it's one of those things that you can see it in the NFL and you can say, you know, hey, Tom Brady was lost for a season as a result of that. So it's kind of the Brady rule. And you don't want to lose, you know, the star. You think about the NFL more than college, right? You know, star quarterbacks boost offense, boost ratings, all that. You don't want those guys to get hurt. You actually want to try to protect them maybe more than other players. And so I get that. And then the counterbalance is, then how are you ever supposed to tackle someone? If you can't, you know, you can't go low, you can't go high. They can move when I'm trying to, you know, tackle them. You know, it's almost how do I do this? And maybe that's a hard thing to answer, but maybe it's also true that you got to protect these guys that are a little bit, you know, defenseless. So I don't know. I don't know that I answered your question. I don't think there is sort of a concrete nail it to the wall answer. I just think there's a lot of conjecture.
Well, we've talked about many times on the show about the lack of technique when it comes predominantly to the secondary of defenses and how they're not tackling like they were taught when they were 5 years old. And so when I started playing football at 5 years old, I was taught to wrap up the legs with my arms, and I was putting my head around, you know, the waist, and I was tackling through the player. Mm-hmm. or I was putting my head in their chest. And so I wasn't, my point is that if you tackle the right way, you shouldn't be down there around their legs. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Or you should be wrapping up your arms with their, like I said this way, had he gone in with his arms to wrap up the legs, his head would have therefore been on the side of the guy's leg, and that wouldn't have happened. That's all I'm saying. I think maybe it's more to do with there wasn't maybe intent there. I think that DBs just don't tackle like they should. They don't tackle. There's not proper tackling technique that's happening on most DBs that you see other than Alabama DBs.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's the sports centerism, you know, around I just want to blast somebody and I just want to hit them, which is not, you know, form tackling. And I also think there is the reality of the dynamic of the game, and I'm getting blocked and I'm getting pushed and I'm getting shoved. And so not every tackle opportunity is as clean as a form tackle drill. And so somewhere in that is the opportunity to have a standard in how you tackle and then also be off of that because of the circumstances of the game. And that's where it makes it squishy to, you know, it's almost like you can see it in hindsight, but it's hard to coach it.
I'm with you. Well, let me point out a couple quick plays that I want to ask you about real quick and get your take on. You know, Josh Jacobs ends up getting more carries than Damian Harris. Starting out of the game, Damian Harris is getting some good carries out of the gate there. Josh Jacobs finishes with 20 carries for 97 yards. And he was, you know, he had the lion's share of the carries on that drive where they went for it at the goal line on fourth down and did not get it. So were you surprised that, and this just goes to show that, you know, Saban doesn't keep up with these kind of stats. It's interesting to me with all the people that you have on the sideline, you know, and Josh had a rhythm going, right? He was the hot hand. Are you surprised they pulled him out at the very end of that drive when he had 97 yards and he was being very effective and the offensive line was actually, you know, some good things had come back to the running game there toward the end of the game there. Were you surprised they pulled him out and brought in Damian?
Now, are you talking about the drive at the very end of the game?
Yes.
Yeah, I think.
I just was surprised that Josh, no offense to Damian Harris, but Josh Jacobs was in at the time. He had the hot hand. You know, he could have gotten a 100-yard day, which would have been nice too. I just was surprised that they took him out and brought in Damian at that point.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way I want to answer this question will sound like I'm throwing shade on Damian, and I'm not. I think that was at a stage of the game where Saban didn't want to score a touchdown. You know, that right there at the end of the game. And so he kept running the ball up the middle, And I just don't think he wanted, you know, the game was over. It had been decided, you know, both teams have sort of left it on the field. And so I don't think he wanted, you know, to score a touchdown there. Now, when Mississippi State came out throwing the ball down the field, I think he might have wanted to rethink that. But I don't think he really wanted to score a touchdown at that point.
All right, so that's why he didn't kick a field goal, okay? So here's what's interesting about that fourth and goal play, because I'm sorry, you know, 31-0 would have looked better than 24-0. And so on that play, right, if you're not trying to score and it's fourth and goal then, why not just take a knee? Because by running the ball and getting stopped at the one-yard line, it looked bad. And it gave momentum to Mississippi State at the end of the game. It gave them a moral victory. If you're not trying to score, why don't you just have the quarterback take a knee then?
Yeah, I mean, you know, those are fair points.
The reason I'm asking that question is on that particular play, Ross Pierce Brocker, you know, he messed up. He went to block the linebacker who was 4 yards off the ball in the end zone, and he did not help out. He did not help Alex Leatherwood on the nose guard. And had he just sat there and just turned him for Alex, right, just double teamed him with Alex and then gone on the linebacker, Damian would have walked in the end zone for a touchdown at the end of the game. And I think it would have been a nice exclamation point. Instead, he just went right around the nose guard to the linebacker who had no chance of tackling Damian at 1 yard, you know, at the 1 yard line. And Alex just got beat on the play and they stopped him. And yeah. So I just didn't like how that played out. I just would have preferred, you know, we didn't get 50 points on them. I just would have preferred them to sit there and score that touchdown and you know, be up 31-0.
No, I agree. We're definitely rooting, you know, for that touchdown. What do you think? I was at the game with our buddy Ray, and one of the things he kept wondering is, you know, why are we not running to the edges? You know, glad the running game is working, but you know, a lot of runs up the middle. Why are we not attacking the edges? And it seemed like a couple of times we did attack the edge, and we had, you know, some success. And I think there was a play earlier in the game where we, you know, I'd been calling for the tall sweep. I love to call for the tall sweep. You know, we were running a tall sweep, and Mississippi State had just gotten a timeout called under the wire. And, you know, just as we were pitching on the tall sweep, what looked like it was going to be a touchdown. So we're going to have that moment of satisfaction on a running to the outside. We're giving Dave a tall sweep and Mississippi State timeout. What'd you think about not the play selection, but the running, sort of the direction running? I think we got to get to the edge.
Well, I think the fact that Mississippi State was leading the SEC in rushing yards allowed, and I think they were third in the country. And we've talked about how this offensive, this you know, young offensive line in some positions seem more comfortable in pass blocking than run blocking. I think they might have gotten faked out by the talent of the defensive line, specifically the two defensive ends. And I think that they didn't want to run away from Montez Sweat because they were concerned he would chase him down from the backside. And then you got a fifth-year senior on the other side in Jerry Green. And then, you know, your defensive tackle is a, you know, fifth-year senior as well. So, you know, you got three seniors across that front line and two very tall, lank, athletic, physical defensive ends. And I think that they just thought that the speed of Mississippi State, that they couldn't outrun it on the edges, and they were trying to run right at players like Sweat.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I'll go with that. You know, you mentioned Josh Jacobs. He certainly had a good day and was definitely demonstrating, you know, the hot hand. Irv Smith just had an Irv Smith day, you know, 5 catches, 70 yards, almost got him a touchdown. What do you make of what do you make of the quarterback situation? You know, Tua's dinged up. Jalen looks like he's not going to go. And so Mac Jones comes in. I feel like for all of the success we've had offensively this season, we've seen Jalen demonstrate improvement earlier in the season. But now with the injuries and the dings, we seem, I want to say unsettled, but for a little bit, we seem unsettled at the quarterback position.
Well, Mac Jones played well in the spring, okay? And mm-hmm. Mac Jones, you know, was a highly regarded quarterback coming out of high school. And I think they should have let Max Jones open it up a little more. Okay. You know, in other words, I think they should have utilized the – I think had they had more success running the ball, when Tua went down, I think that – Mississippi State's like, we know you're not going to throw the ball with your quarterback. You're going to run the ball. And so then, you know, there was more emphasis, excuse me, on stopping the run. And so I think in that situation, I would have liked to them to do a little play action with Jones and see if play action allows some things to open up for him. But I think that, you know, in this next game against the Citadel, they've got to let him get some confidence, making some, you know, completing some passes,
yep.
You know, in the 10 to 15 yard range, because I think that they were intent on saying we're up 21-0. Mississippi State cannot do anything offensively, and we're just going to run the ball. And therefore it played into Mississippi State's hands, which is strong against the run to shut the run down.
Yeah. I think we reached a point. We just wanted, let's get out of this game. And how do we run that clock as much as we can? Let's get out of the game. Unless you've got something else on offense, give me a mini game ball.
No, you know, mini game ball. I'm going to let you go first. I'm still toying between a couple different guys. Go ahead and give me yours first.
Yeah, I'm kind of going backwards on my mini game ball, sort of a reverse mini game ball. I'm going Deonte Brown. I don't think all of the woes of the running game were on the shoulders of Lester. But I do think Deonte certainly contributed, demonstrated, you know, that he earned, and it was a well-earned opportunity to start I like the competition that fosters. I like his play. I'm going mini game ball Deontay Brown. Get that turf toe straightened out, and we'll see you against Auburn.
All right, so I'm going to give it to the senior Hale. I think Hale did a really good job blocking yet again. He does the dirty work, man. He doesn't get granted he's a top starter depth wise, but he doesn't get all the pub that Irv Smith does. But he does. He's asked to block a lot of guys that are 50 pounds, heavier than he is. And, he's doing the dirty work. Yep. And when they were having all that success running the ball, it was in large part to him contributing to that. So I'm going to give the mini game ball to Hill.
I think that's a good one. I like the use of dirty work there. That's exactly what he does. I think we're better for that. Let's flip the field, go to defense. What jumps out to you on D?
You know, Mississippi State came into this game, there was questions as to why, what had happened to Fitzgerald. And if Fitzgerald was the same guy, prior to, his injury. And, I'm just going to say that this is a guy that came into this game. Obviously he had not had a whole lot of success on the season as far as his completion percentages. But this guy, he came into the season, I think around 50% completion percentage, but this guy had come into the game, with a lot of success running the ball. And yep. On his career at Mississippi State, had a lot of success running the ball. And, this is a guy that came into this game and he had 4 100-yard days running the ball. He actually carried the ball 28 times against Auburn for 195 yards, 28 carries. And so this is a guy that normally gets close to 20 carries every single game. And so I thought it was interesting how quickly they abandoned that. He had 14 carries, which was a lot for, most quarterbacks. But here's a guy that came in with 500-yard days, and the guy finished with 14 carries for negative 23 yards. Obviously, the sacks take away from that total. But that's the first thing that jumped out at me, man. This defense that continues to get better. They knew going into the week what the game plan was going to be for Mississippi State, and they were able to shut Fitzgerald down.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think definitely he has struggled as a passer, and the defense I think really rose to the occasion. I think Fitzgerald earlier this season took over the rushing lead for SEC quarterbacks, which really speaks to a capability there. But I think the defense as a whole, and I kind of weigh back and forth: is the defense really playing that well, or have the last 2 weeks we just run into inept offenses? I think a little bit of both, right? I think, we play the 13th and 14th ranked quarterbacks in terms of, a lot of stats. I think we held them to 44 yards rushing. They were 1 of 13 on third downs, which is, you'd think you would accidentally get more than that. And then the defense started the game as strong as the offense did. Mississippi State, on their first 14 plays, they gained 14 yards. Net yards, and that accounted for their first four possessions. And so that is dominating right out of the gates. Even if you think of a more of an inept offense, you're getting their best shot to start the game. The stuff that they worked on, the stuff they iterated on, the stuff that they put in their, scripted plays, and to hold them to a play a yard across the first 14 plays, pretty darn impressive there.
No, it is. And to your point about inept offense, okay, and his passing woes, which are all correct, Auburn's got a very good front defensive line, right? And he had, he averaged 7 yards a carry, right? Well, then the next, after the bye at LSU, which obviously, is a good defense too, he had 23 carries for 131 yards.
Right.
So I'm only putting that out there to say that, he got almost 200 yards against Auburn and 131 again at LSU. And so for him to have negative 23 yards, that's a big deal to me. Yep. What else jumped out at you as far as speak to me for a second about the call that, you know, as far as the situation where their best scoring attempt that they had in the first half there, obviously they shot themselves in the foot because we had blown a couple assignments, and thank goodness they had a touchdown taken off the board.
Yeah, I think I think that was a bad call by the official. I think that was a legit touchdown. I don't think it sways the outcome of the game, but certainly 7 looks better than 0. And, you know, you want to, the team feels better about themselves, and maybe there's an opportunity for momentum. But I think it's one of those, it's, you know, magicians all the time. It's a little bit of sleight of hand, and it's a little bit the angles at which you see things. But the defender sort of, you know, was putting up his hands, but did it sort of outward and up, as opposed to, you know, from his sides straight up. And at the moment that he was putting his hands outward and up, the defender, our defender trying to make a play, dove. And so from an angle, it looked like he was pushed. And it's just the way they lined up. And if your perspective was different, you would have seen that there was a gap. But from the perspective of coming in sort of behind the you know, their player, then it certainly looked like the receiver, it certainly looked like there was a shove. And I just think that is, and, you know, sound like an Alabama homer. I'm not trying to. I think that's just one of those, you watch enough football, that's going to go for you and against you. And in this situation, it went for us, not in a way that materially, you know, impacted the outcome of the game. You hate when plays like that are called incorrectly. You doubly hate when they're called incorrectly and it impacts the outcome of the game here. And it's easy for me to say, being on the right side of it and the Alabama side of it, but I just kind of shrug and say, that's just one of those things that happen. But it was a bad call.
Tell me as far as from a defensive standpoint, what else kind of jumped out at you?
I think you're holding back, man. You've got a question you want to ask me.
No, I want you to speak to your guy, and you might be holding him out for a mini game ball, but I'll go ahead and put it out there. You know, we talked about this kid last week, Jared Maiden, and we talked about him getting a little time on the, a little more playing time. And there was one third down play where there was a crossing pattern to a wide receiver, and Jared Maiden was, you know, 5-6 yards off the guy. And he flies in and takes the right angle and takes this guy down on the sideline about 2 yards short of a first down. And you look at that play, and you would have, if you didn't pay attention, and if he didn't have a number on his jersey, if it was just, you know, a crimson jersey with no number on it, you would have thought it would have been a Deontay Thompson or Xavier McKinney making the play. Yep. It was just one of those flash plays that that just, you know, makes you feel good. This is a guy who is going to step up at the end when it counts, like Deontay Thompson did last year against Georgia. And he's going to make a big play here, you know, some big impact play before the season's over.
Yeah, absolutely. And you did just trample all over my mini game ball. I thought I was going to be pretty safe in giving a mini game ball to the dime back, right? But, you know, here you go. And I was, you know, and I was going to say things along the lines of, you know, he came in and talk about big plays. He had a sack on the day. And so he came in, we come in and dime and then, you know, blitz the dime back. That is almost unfair in terms of, you know, sort of the numbers in the matchups. And, you know, he is patrolling the secondary, very comfortable is a sort of an expression that we'll use. He is playing that way. I know at the beginning of the season, we're trying to sort out what's the rotation, and, you know, we base out of a nickel. So we feel like, you know, have some solidness there, but what's that dime going to be? And when Savion started and then Trayvon came on and sort of took over him, you know, that sort of jostled that dime back position. But, you know, with Trayvon out, Jared has really settled in and performed well. And I think he is, you know, one of the emerging youngsters. I think, you know, next year, obviously the secondary will look a little bit different. And I think Jared Maiden will be part of it because of his contributions. So, yeah, there's my mini game ball there.
All right. So I have another quick play to ask you about. There was a moment in time where I do think, obviously, we talked about Tua's injury and there's something yep. there. You know, I think it's affecting, you know, his delivery of, you know, it's his plant foot, right? He's a left-handed quarterback. And so he's planting with that leg, and Mississippi State got a lot of pressure, a lot of good pressure against Alabama. And really got him off his spot, right? They affected the quarterback, like Saban's always saying, and they affected him quite well. There, you know, when Tua threw that interception, interception in the game on a 3rd and 19, and Mississippi State had the ball at the 40-yard line, and here we are, and it is still 21-0. I just wanted to just kudos to the defense. They come in and Mississippi State's got the ball 1st and 10 on the 40. Three plays later, they punt from the Alabama 42.
Yep.
They started at the 40. They punted at the 42. And so just, dude, I don't think I would have guessed that a team like Mississippi State that was regarded to vie for the West, right, with the defense and all the lost players, all the lost starters and guys that, you know, graduated and went pro, that I would have expected a defense to be able to come in and handle them like that in that situation.
Yep.
You talk about demoralizing. Are you kidding me? You start at the 40 and you punt it from the 42? That was just awesome. That whole little series, I just want to talk about it real quick.
No, I think you're spot on. I think when you can have that level of confidence in your defense to sort of bail you out, I think the whole team is sort of elevated by that. And so I think that's definitely, I think that bodes well, right? Not only for this game, but for the confidence of the teams and the units. The defense, I think, it really is hitting its stride. And I think that's a good example. Even though maybe Mississippi State isn't the most juggernaut offense, you look at that situational defense on a quick turnover, unexpectedly, the defense is sort of running back out. A lot of times there's a big momentum shift back to the offense, you know, as they come back in and the defense said, no, not today. And so I think that's good. Anything else on defense we need to talk about?
Yeah, man, I need to find out if any listeners took us up on our request, because I've been waiting to hear that we got some. What's our segment going to be called here, man? Because I've been ready to start the show with it, but it hasn't come up yet. So
you're not wanting to talk about Quinnen Williams, are you?
Dude, he led the stat sheet again. Yes, man. I got to have a name so I can put it out there.
All right. So we have options, which is awesome. You sort of put the word out, hey, reach out to us and let us know. And so we got we had three people take us up on that offer. And so we've got Henry, a 15-year-old from Minnesota, whose dad is from Alabama. And so sort of passed down that legacy. Hats off to Henry and to Henry's dad for passing on the Bama fandom. Henry suggested that we give Quinnen the, like we do the mini game balls, that we give Quinnen the big boy ball because he is just balling out and performing so well week after week. Chris Fillingham said that we need to call it the bell ringer or call Quinnen the bell ringer. And then Kenny Hosey says that we need to call the Quinnen session the queued up report. So I'll let you take your pick, but we definitely got to talk about the SEC Defensive Player of the Week.
Well, man, he just, you know, those are all great suggestions, and we appreciate that, and we will select one to use for next week's show. So thank you very much for giving us your responses. You know, here's a guy who was banged up against LSU, and you think he's going to be a little gimpy, and this just goes back to all the treatment that they're able, the resources they have to treat these guys, because you know he comes out and is he probably still banged up? Sure. He doesn't even show any glimpse of it. You know, he finishes, you know, 6 tackles, 4 solos. You know, he gets 1 sack, but 2 tackles for loss once again from the nose guard position, and just affected the quarterback, man. And there was a couple times where I just enjoyed counting the seconds that Fitzgerald had before he had him in his face and he had to do something. And so it just goes back to what we talked about before. I mean, your inside guys are your run stuffers typically. And you know, they have to be double teamed. And so I guess there is one thing I want to mention here that I guess probably jumped out to me the most is at the beginning of the telecast, they talk about the Mississippi State center. And they talk about the fact that he is currently up for the best center in the nation. Okay, fifth year senior,
yep.
And he is regarded as in the running with Piersbacher for, you know, they're two of the, you know, finalists for the, you know, for the top center in the country. And so there was one particular play where Quinnen Williams is like right on the ball and his helmet was probably, it was probably, you know, literally the my hand between between his helmet and the center's helmet. And he's right over the ball. And I'm sure Mississippi State's thinking, hey, our center can take him. No problem. We got one of the top centers in the country. And he just beats him in 2 seconds and sacks the quarterback. And so then the very next play, they've got their right guard helping him block Quinnen Williams. So on the very next play, because I went back and watched it again, the other guys rushing the passer for Alabama, they all have single matchups. And Quinnen Williams is the only guy on the line of scrimmage getting double teamed.
Yep.
And he's the nose guard. And he's getting double teamed because that stud center couldn't take him by himself. I just thought that was what a huge example, man, of what Quinnen Williams can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He definitely is a queued up big ball bell ringer. Did I get them all in there?
I got to say, I like them all, man, but I'm kind of leaning toward bell ringer here, but absolutely. Maybe we could just use them all, right?
That's
maybe
right.
They all we'll would just, apply to him.
We'll
maybe
just
maybe
throw them all
we can
there.
Start with one and then we can finish with one and in the middle. We can throw in the other one kind of.
There you go. So, hey, and unless you got something else on defense, give me a mini game ball.
You know, this is really going to tick you off, but it's okay, man, because I don't get a chance to do this very often. And so I'm going, since you're going to let me go first, I'm going to make you kind of pivot here, man. I'm giving my mini game ball to Jared Maiden. No, I won't do that. I'll let you do that. I'm going to give my mini game ball to Patrick Surtain. And the reason why is because he is going to be a stud. He obviously is a starter right now as a true freshman, but his awareness of the game, okay, he gets it. He's a student of the game, and he gets it. And you can tell just the little things he does, right? Yep. I mean, obviously we can talk about special teams in a second when he downed the ball at the 1 yard line, but he just is a student of the game. And not only is he athletically gifted, but he just gets it. He understands the moment and what he needs to do. And so he just made some fundamentally sound technical plays in this game that, you know, it wasn't an interception. It wasn't anything that people are going to go back and look at, but he just does the little things that is really so important when you're on an island like that.
No, I think that's spot on. I think that, you know, they definitely shied away from him, which is impressive considering, you know, he technically is still a true freshman. I think the fact that his dad is a multi-year pro bowler, I think he did sort of grow up in it, which I think is awesome too. I think that's a great pick. You know, I've already sort of given my mini game ball to Jared Maiden after you sort of trampled on all the stuff I was going to say about him. So I'll go out with sort of two quick hitters. Carter just continues to sort of be the silent assassin back there. Almost had him a pick, certainly a pass deflection. And Jennings, wrap up, man. Just wrap him up when you have him in the backfield. So that's what I got on defense. All right, so let's shift gears and look at special teams. And we're going to come down the home stretch with just Dave. We had a hard stop at our earlier recording session, and we're just going to wrap this up with me. So let's hit some highlights here on special teams. I think there were some mostly good on Saturday. And I think the headliner is Bolivis hitting a 49-yarder. That was a career best for him. And certainly there was an enthusiastic cheer when we saw that go up. We've seen a lot of woes in the kicking game. And for him to hit a 49-yarder, I think there were probably low expectations that he would connect. And he certainly did. And so that gives us certainly some upside to look for. I still don't know that I would ever want us to come down to needing a kick to win a game. But seeing that he has that sort of in his back pocket isn't altogether bad. He was 3 of 3 on his PATs, which is, you know, kind of not for nothing either. Mike Brunier on his punting, he had 5 punts, which is certainly more punts than we like to see from an Alabama punter, especially down the stretch. I think we had a 3-game stretch where we punted once. And so to get 5 in a single game, certainly speaks to the Bulldog defense there. But 5 points, his average was only 36.6. But I think there's other some other cool things to look at to put that average in context. And we talked about this last week where he had 2 kicks, you know, averaged right at, you know, 36, 37 yards. And they were both right at that distance. And so there wasn't a lot of standard deviation in his kicking. Here, the average 36.6, we've got a long of 43. And so we're seeing some upside there. And we also know that he pinned the team down at the 1 on a kick. And so that that's going to maybe be that's going to impact some of his distance there. But accuracy, getting the right spin on the ball, getting the right hang time so that the gunners can get down there and down that. And certainly hats off to Patrick Surtain, a true freshman that's really playing above above level, that was able to down that ball. Ali Kohei, another freshman that's really making a name for himself on special teams. He recovered a fumble on punt coverage, and that one that was sort of fun to watch because just the placement of the field and the side of the body where the guy was fielding, the returner was fielding the ball, was almost pretty lined up with where I was sitting, and just instantly you could see him catch the ball and then it bounce out. And Kohei was just right there on spot to corral that ball. So that's good. We had no punt returns, which really speaks to teams sort of kicking away from Jalen Waddle and kicking away from a returner can mean a couple of different things. Not necessarily kicking to the opposite side of the field, but sky in the ball. So there's significant hang time. So the coverage team can get down there. And we've been seeing more and more of that, certainly as Jalen Waddle has been revealed as a weapon in the return game. And I think he still has some big returns for us sort of in his back pocket. But I think that we're seeing teams adjust to that. And Mississippi State certainly did that. Again, continue to field the ball clean, establish field possession, possess the ball, right? The most important thing you can do there. And so we're continuing to see that. And then, you know, we kind of all know my favorite thing to watch is kickoff returns. And so Josh Jacobs, you know, returns the ball out of the end zone or, you know, right at the 1 yard line for, you know, downs the ball at the 27 or is tackled at the 27. And so he gained 2 yards on that in my return math, but he's credited with the full 27. And so he had a big day number wise, and certainly, you know, tacking 27 to the end of that, in my estimation, pads that number in an unrealistic way. But I am largely on an island when it comes to that. I would say overall, those special teams played well. We saw some things that, you know, a 49-yard kick, down in the ball at the 1, a turnover. So we saw some really good things on special teams. And that's good because we've seen some blah days on special teams. And it speaks to the coaching that we're seeing from Banks and the contribution that we're seeing that we can have some highlights at different levels or different types of highlights on special teams. So that's certainly good to see. Let's move forward and talk about next week. The Tide hosts the Citadel, and it's another one of those sort of cupcake Saturdays, and there's more than one. And every year the media tries to outdo how they've mocked this week and prior seasons. And so it sort of feeds on itself. It's, you know, it's one of those things. Saban talks about every game being important. And I agree with that. Gene Stallin said, if you don't think one of these games is important, try losing one. And that's true too. And so I understand the coach's mentality. I understand coach wants to, you know, it's a process. You get better every day. You don't look at the scoreboard. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. You are your own opponent. And so you can't decide when you're going to turn it on, when you're going to turn it off. And so I understand he has sort of that angst, and it's almost a competition for the team's attention with the media. And I think sometimes when he sort of acts out, if you will, at a press conference. He's trying to win that competition for attention. And I went back and listened to his Monday press conference, and I felt, man, you know, the poor media guy didn't ask the question that Saban sort of ranted on. He just saw that as his best opening to sort of get out what he had. And I get it. I get it from that perspective. You know, certainly as well, the Citadel here is a team that's 4-5 in the Southern Conference. So we can't look at them as a true threat, but we've got to go in and compete, and we've got to compete against a standard. And if you sort of lackadaisically perform on the field, that's when you're actually more apt to get injury. So you go out there, do what you do. We'll take a lead. We'll rotate guys in, and we'll sort of play through from there. You know, just for context, we did mention the Citadel 4-5 in the Southern Conference. In some respect, that's kind of all you need to know. But for grins, the Citadel lost to East Tennessee. And I was looking at these numbers earlier, so I may not get them exactly right. I don't have the margin for that game. I could look it up. But Citadel lost to East Tennessee. East Tennessee lost to Tennessee by 51 points. Tennessee lost to Alabama by 46 points. So we are at least 97 points, closer to 100 points better than Citadel would be one way of looking at it. I'm not sure it's quite that transitive, but you kind of get the point there. I think this is a name our score game. The only thing that's interesting about this opponent, and again, I sort of credit Saban for this in ways that most of the media will overlook, but this is an option team. This is a triple option team. And so this is a type of offense, a type of defensive sort of discipline, if you will, that we don't see on a week-over-week basis. It can be tough to compete against. This team, Citadel, is not nearly as good as the Georgia Southern team that's, you know, played the tin horn drill on us a couple of years ago. But it's still going to give us things to look at. And I like that we have this, you know, sort of year-over-year when you schedule these games, you don't know what, you know, maybe an Auburn offense is going to look like, but they certainly have used a lot of triple option tendencies in their game plan. And so the fact that we have an opportunity to sort of look at this 2 weeks in a row, I think is just a subtle nod to, you know, Saban thinking ahead and seeing a much larger picture. So I give them, I certainly give them kudos and credit for that. This is a name your score game. I think it'll be a low key affair. I'm thinking 38-6. Maybe they get in striking distance. Maybe there's a turnover and that gives them an opportunity at a field goal. Tommy doesn't think dissimilarly. I got his score and he was thinking 49-3 based solely on, you know, Saban not wanting to cross the 50 threshold. So we will absolutely see how that goes. I want to give, as we wrap this up, I want to give a special shout out to listener Paul. Paul gave us a review, which we read on the air in our last show, and hit us up in the email, and we ended up having a couple emails back and forth, and turns out his seats in the stadium were pretty close to where I was sitting, and so we met up, you know, during the game for a few minutes, and then after the game. Great guy, great Alabama fan from the, I'm going to remember, from the Charleston area. And so great opportunity to just connect with the listeners out there. We greatly appreciate you guys tuning in. We greatly appreciate your comments. We greatly appreciate your reviews on the iTunes. This is Tommy and I, just two guys talking football, and the fact that you enjoy it and you guys reach out to us is flattering. And so we greatly appreciate that. Drop us an email. We try to respond to everything. We try to answer all the questions, and we certainly want to get your reviews, you know, on the air. We appreciate your feedback and any sort of outreach in that way. And of course, the 5-star reviews help us in the rankings on iTunes. We appreciate that. We got some national media giants out there that we rank pretty well against. And it's only because you guys out there and gals are out there listening and giving us reviews and engaging with us. So we greatly appreciate that. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.